May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Peter Roberts, and I represent Alex Molia, the bankruptcy trustee of Outboard Marine Corporation, also known as OMC. This appeal arises from the district court's reversal of a bankruptcy court order. The bankruptcy court had vacated its previous order of arbitration.
Well, your opponent is saying that the trustee's position will make it impossible ever to arbitrate a matter that's in bankruptcy. Do you have some response to that?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. I don't think the parade of horribles analogy is apt here. If you look at the circumstances of this particular case, the bankruptcy judge, Judge Squires, acted well within his discretion.
But the arbitrators won't arbitrate unless they have this hold harmless agreement, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And yet, as I understand your position, it's that to require the trustee to sign such an agreement is to impose a contingent liability on the debtor's estate.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So if the arbitrators insist on this agreement and the trustee refuses, how does a matter in bankruptcy get arbitrated?
Well, I think in this particular case, Your Honor...
Why do you say in this particular case? Why wouldn't it be in every case?
Because because indemnity agreements aren't necessarily compulsory in every arbitration.
I don't know what you're talking about. Suppose arbitrators insist on this agreement. Mm-hmm. Then on your view, there can't be an arbitration in a bankruptcy.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, why should the trustee be insisting on this? What is he worried about?
Well, I think the trustee is worried about the same liability that the panel is worried about.
What is it you envisage? The arbitrators award. If the arbitrators award. What did the arbitrators award a judgment, award relief to the trustee? And then the losers sue the arbitrators, and the arbitrators incur expenses in defending, and the people who sued them can't pay, and then he goes after the trustee. Is that the...
That's one of the concerns, Your Honor.
That's one of the concerns?
Yes.
What are the other concerns?
Also, with respect to this hold harmless agreement, there's also a clause that says the arbitrators get paid their hourly rates and having to deal with whatever claim is asserted against them.
I don't understand. The trustee is also unwilling to pay the arbitrators?
Not unwilling to pay them for their services as an arbitrator, Your Honor. There is a provision in the hold harmless agreement that says if the arbitration panel has a claim asserted against it, the indemnity covers not only the claim that's asserted against them, not only their out-of-pockets, but also whatever their hourly...
Well, of course. That's just part of their expenses if they're sued. But... This seems so unlikely. Why would anybody worry about such a thing? Has this ever happened? That someone went after a trustee arbitrators went after a trustee because they've been sued by someone?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Then
but
why screw up the works with this, you know, hypothetical fear?
Well, Your Honor, it wasn't our hypothetical fear. It was the arbitrator's fear of liability. We looked for...
No. It's the trustee's hypothetical fear that he's going to be sued because someone sues the arbitrator and that someone can't pay the arbitrator's expense and the arbitrator comes after him. That's the hypothetical fear. It seems extremely remote.
And my point, Your Honor, was only that whatever that fear is, whatever that liability is, it's the same when
it is a contingent liability that probably has an actuarial value of under $1. Now, the trustee has spent considerably more than $1 to ward off a claim with an actuarial value of less than $1. Is there some reason for spending more than a dollar to save a dollar?
That's true in hindsight, Your Honor. At the time, the trustee consulted with the Office of the United States Trustee because indemnities in bankruptcy are a hot-button issue for both the Office of the United States Trustee.
I'm sorry, I what?
A hot-button issue.
Indemnity issue, of arbitrators?
Indemnity in general, Your Honor.
Well, wait a second. What do you mean in general? When is the last time an arbitrator was indemnified by anybody? Who sues arbitrators?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Well, what is they worrying about? How can you be worrying about something he doesn't know anything about?
He's worried about the same thing that the panel was worried about, which is the fear of the unknown.
What panel?
The arbitration panel.
They're not worried. Look, it's a one in a million chance, so they require this old harmless agreement. Everyone signs it. It's no big deal.
Right, and more than that, the arbitrators observe that the trustee appears to be behaving irrationally. Anybody who will spend more than, as you've surely spent, more than $10,000 to reduce his liability by $1 is not behaving in a normal commercial manner. One might think the arbitrators would get worried about suits against them by this trustee. And sensibly, if the trustee isn't behaving rationally, then the arbitrators get worried.
I have another issue for you. What is the appealable interlocutory order that provides the hook for pendant appellate jurisdiction? There's only one order at issue here, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So, if so, how is pendant appellate jurisdiction implicated at all?
The hook, Your Honor, comes with the district court's, the portion of the order in which the district court commanded the parties to execute the hold harmless agreement.
So,
you call that an injunction, but why do you think that's an injunction? Orders to do are common in litigation. An order to turn over documents in discovery is an order to do. On your view, it sounds like you'd call that an injunction. Normally, we think of injunctions as orders affecting the merits of the litigation, not procedural orders. Do you have a good example of a procedural order in the litigation affecting how the litigation proceeds that gets called an injunction?
No, I don't, Your Honor. But I can
so
tell
you. So your hook for pendant appellate jurisdiction is frivolous. If you have no case in the history of American law holding a procedural order in the litigation to be appealable as an injunction, then the hook is non-existent.
Well, Your Honor, our point is that it's more than a procedural order, that it's more than a matter of scheduling.
Do you think the order to arbitrate is appealable as an injunction?
No, I don't.
Is the order to pay the arbitrators appealable as an injunction? No. Is the order to make discovery in the arbitration appealable as an injunction? No. So why is this appealable as an injunction?
Because as soon as we sign that hold harmless agreement, Your Honor, we're incurring a liability, and it can't
be
undone.
The order to pay the arbitrators causes the incurring of a liability in the bankruptcy. But incurring a liability in the bankruptcy is not an injunction. Otherwise, you would have told me that the order to arbitrate or to pay the arbitrators was appealable as an injunction. So you can't mean that any contingent liability is an injunction, because otherwise the order to pay the arbitrators, which is not contingent, is appealable as an injunction.
And, Your Honor, we didn't appeal, you know, the order to pay.
We didn't appeal is because it's obviously not an injunction, and the appeal is squarely foreclosed by 9 U.S.C. 16b, even if it is.
Your Honor, our point is that it has an injunctive effect because it has a permanent effect upon the estate. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
A lot of things have an effect.
And our point, Your Honor, is that it has a...
Have you been paid? Is this money coming out of what the creditors are entitled to?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Which money?
Well, I'm pursuing Judge Easterbrook's question, right? This is a terrible waste of the assets of the estate, this litigation.
Well, Your Honor, we thought it was important in order to...
Why do you think it's important when you've never even heard of a case in which someone tried to go after a trustee to make him pay for expenses incurred by arbitrators in defending against a suit. Why is that important?
Well, because we, at the same time, Your Honor, we had never heard of a case in which someone threatened an arbitration panel with liability over and above the immunity that they're already protected with. The panel
what
made it clear
do you
mean
to these us. These hold harmless agreements are not standard.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I thought these hold harmless agreements were standard.
I don't think they are, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, one of the issues that came up and was touched upon by the district court was the fact that we were proceeding under the commercial arbitration rules of the AAA, which don't have an express provision for a hold harmless. Contrast that.
What do you mean don't have an express provision?
There's no provision in the commercial arbitration rules of the AAA to provide arbitrators with a hold harmless. Contrast that with the supplementary rules that exist in certain disputes, such as intra-insurance and reinsurance disputes. Those rules do have an express requirement to give a hold harmless. And we had asked the panel to give us some evidence some justification as to why they needed the hold harmless, why it was standard. And the only thing they could point to were rules and forms.
What were you worried about?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What were you worried about?
The same thing they were worried about, Your Honor. We looked for alternatives.
Who did you think would sue them?
Well, they were concerned about the many creditors of the OMC estate. They thought, for example, we had suggested...
I worry about them now, I'll tell you.
Well, they had suggested that they couldn't get some sort of alternative insurance coverage to cover them for the liability they were concerned about. And you know, what we were concerned about is the same liability. We had suggested with them alternatives that they could pursue so that they wouldn't need... to hold harmless.
What would be an alternative you suggest?
One thing that we suggested to them is that we could try to get them employed by the bankruptcy estate and try to bring them into the shield of the Barton Doctrine so that we could enhance their immunity.
Yeah, I'm sorry, what was your alternative?
That we could try to get an order employing them by the bankruptcy estate to bring them within the umbrella of the Barton Doctrine so that their immunity would be enhanced.
I'm lost.
Yeah, so.
I don't understand the concept of immunity. If they've committed some transgressions, the fact that they are employees of the bankruptcy estate doesn't protect them. Indeed, as you may be aware, we recently imposed very substantial sanctions on a trustee in bankruptcy for taking a frivolous appeal. He wasn't protected by any immunity doctrine.
I raised the issue, Judge, that we were looking for alternatives. We were trying to come up with a way to make everyone happy without having to give them this hold harmless.
Do you agree that the arbitration agreement itself is enforceable?
To the extent it constitutes a forum selection clause, Your Honor, ordinarily it would be. But Judge Squires ultimately determined that it came in conflict with the efficient administration of the estate. So,
Well, there's no such doctrine.
Go ahead. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what the basis is for, you know, the argument. In the brief that the bankruptcy court has discretion to treat the arbitration agreement as non-binding by adjudicating the adversary proceeding. I'm pretty lost.
And, Your Honor, the jurisprudence that exists right now about the enforceability of arbitration clauses in bankruptcy is literally all over the map. This court has not weighed in. Different circuits have different approaches. When you boil all those approaches down, one of the general rules that comes through at the end of the day is that if the matter before the bankruptcy court is a core matter, the bankruptcy court has jurisdiction not to enforce the arbitration provision if he believes it comes in conflict.
I just don't understand it. I can understand the concept that's actually in the code of the trustee abandoning a contract that has an arbitration clause. And maybe that would just create a damages award in bankruptcy for breach of the arbitration agreement along with the rest of the contract. But the trustee hasn't purported to abandon this contract, has it?
Yes, we rejected it. It was rejected as a matter of law, Your Honor.
All right. So that actually is something that's in the code.
Yes, Your Honor. It
sounds better than this airy, inconsistent with efficient administration.
I agree, Your Honor. And if you look at it from just a complete bankruptcy code perspective, it's a no-brainer that because the underlying program agreement was not assumed, it was therefore rejected, and whatever claims arise out of that rejected contract are treated like all the other pre-petition claims. And one of our arguments is that by virtue of the district court's order, some of those claims were being improperly elevated to administrative priority status. I see that I'm out of time, Your Honor.
You're saying that the trustee has abandoned an executory contract that contained an arbitration clause?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Mr. Beck.
May it please the Court, my name is Paul Beck, and I represent Pacific Employers Insurance.
Can I just ask you a bottom-line question right off the bat?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Rudely not allowing you to even say a word. Is the trustee wrong that if he cannot appeal the order to sign the hold harmless agreement, he will forever lose his right to avoid potential liability under the agreement?
Yes, the trustee is wrong because those issues can be addressed in the normal course of an appeal from the outcome of the actual arbitration. And in that connection, I would point out to the Court that there are two basic scenarios which could occur as a result of this. There may be more hypothetically, but I haven't thought of them as of yet. The primary scenario is that the trustee will be dissatisfied with the result of the arbitration, and the trustee will bring some kind of challenge to the award, and in connection with that, the trustee could conceivably sue the arbitrators individually and expose their personal assets. That seems unlikely, and the arbitrators were correctly concerned about the trustee's behavior from a litigation standpoint here. Another hypothetical situation that could still be addressed in the normal course of an appeal from an arbitration proceeding would be the hypothetical, it's been posited, I've never known it to occur, but the hypothetical situation in which a third party, a creditor of some kind or somebody else who doesn't like what's happening and believes that the trustee has acted in dereliction of the trustee's own duties would try to challenge the award. But the place and the manner of doing that would be in the normal course of an appeal from an arbitration award under the FAA, given the normal standard of review. There could actually be a bankruptcy angle to that, Your Honor.
Are hold harmless agreements like the one demanded here commonly used by arbitrators in the insurance industry?
Yes, in my experience, Your Honor, but I'm not a fact witness here.
You're not a what?
I'm not a fact witness, but yes, in my experience litigating many cases for this client and other insurers, they are routinely demanded both in business disputes involving insurers and now if the stakes are high enough, and even in small cases, they're demanded.
See, if as you claimed in the brief, the hold harmless agreement doesn't add anything to the arbitral immunity that this panel already enjoys, what's the point of it?
Oh, I'm sorry. If that's a suggestion that my brief made, I may have misstated it. What the agreement gives the arbitrators is the protection, the practical protection that a judge would enjoy, which is not simply the legal doctrine that provides a defense of immunity, but actually the practical protection or the deterrence of such lawsuits. Now, if the members of this panel, for example, were to be sued by a pro se prisoner or any pro se litigant or any litigant for that matter, the Department of Justice would provide Your Honors with counsel, and your own personal assets would not be exposed. But arbitrators, well, let's hope they wouldn't be exposed, Your Honor. Arbitrators, especially in high-stakes cases like this, have a legitimate concern about being dragged into these things. And I can't overemphasize the stakes in the underlying case, and perhaps that hasn't come out quite loudly enough in the briefing. The trustee is making the claim here that Pacific did not sue the trustee. Pacific has millions of dollars in collateral that it is entitled to have as a matter of contract. The trustee is seeking, as a matter of its contract rights, Outboard Marine's contract rights, to recover some portion of that collateral, which it claims is, quote, excess collateral.
Assuming that we would uphold the district court's order here, and the parties would have to sign the hold harmless agreement and arbitrate their claims, would the same panel still conduct the arbitration?
At this point, there's been no effort to replace the panel by either side of the case. The trustee has made noise about, or suggesting, I think perhaps in a footnote in one of its briefs, that the panel is somehow biased against the trustee because the panel members made a submission to the bankruptcy court. Well, as Mr. Roberts said in his opening argument, the trustee actually asked the members of the panel for some justification or basis for their request for the hold harmless, and that's why they made the submissions they did. So there's no bias here, and that would, to me, be the only basis for even considering such a change. Your Honor, if I could possibly return to a few of the questions that were raised during opening argument. There were questions.
There's a clash between you and the trustee. The
yes.
trustee is emphatic that he's abandoned the contract that contains the arbitration clause, and you say he hasn't abandoned it because he wants its benefits. So could you explain that?
Yes, Your Honor, and in that connection, it may be helpful for the court to look at page 206 of the joint appendix, which is the security article under one of the program agreements that are being sued upon here by the trustee. This agreement is really what's driving the whole lawsuit. A program agreement, this is, as I said, just one of several that were executed
well,
over many years.
That's the one they say they abandoned.
Yes, and in answer to Your Honor's question, this particular contract, and on page 206 of the appendix, it explains at great length what the purpose of the collateral security is, how it will be handled into the future, what the obligations of the parties are on an ongoing basis after the insurance policies are concluded. It's an ongoing duty, so it is an executory contract. And it also specifically addresses how collateral will be returned and how the level of collateral will be determined and who will determine it. All of that's addressed on page 206 as an example here. And that's exactly the issue that they're raising in their lawsuit.
You've lost me. That page 206, is that part of this contract, the program agreement?
Yes, it's Article 4 of the program agreement.
They abandoned the whole thing. So why are you reading from that?
Well, because what they're trying to do is assert contractual rights under the contract. They may have a right.
Well,
if it's determined
to, they say they're not. They say they've abandoned the whole thing.
Well, I know they say that, but they can't just make it disappear.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
If they abandoned it, it's gone, right?
Well, except what they're doing is they're asserting rights under the contract. They can't simultaneously abandon the contract.
But they say they abandoned the contract. So if we
yes.
said, well, they've said they've abandoned the contract, so they've abandoned it. It's gone. Why wouldn't that prevent them from asserting rights under it?
Well, Your Honor, because of the well-settled doctrine that a trustee or a debtor in possession can't cherry-pick the parts of the bargain for agreement.
You're missing the point. The question is, why don't you take them at their word? They say they've abandoned it. we can say they've abandoned it, and the consequence of that is that they lose all its benefits. They're gone. As a matter of law, they're gone. You should be dancing a jig rather than resisting. I'm puzzled by this.
Your Honor, you're right to say that. We should be dancing a jig, yet my clients do not believe under the contract that they have a right, simply because the trustee's fallen into bankruptcy, to keep all the collateral for now and forever. This collateral is on workers' compensation programs that have very long tails.
I don't understand you.
Yep.
Suppose this, that they are committed. They've certainly said flatly in their reply brief they've abandoned the program agreement. If they have abandoned it, what is your concern?
Well, if they've abandoned it, and if the trustee is willing to say then that they also
willing to say if they've abandoned it, what are the consequences?
The legal consequence.
If that contract no longer exists, what are the consequences for you? What is your concern?
The legal consequence of abandonment or rejection of an executory contract is a breach. Breach of the contract would allow us to suspend any obligations we had under the contract. And to get to Your Honor's point and to Judge Easterbrook's point, one of our obligations under the contract, which can be suspended, is the duty to return collateral. That would be the logical outcome of this.
You're still not responding.
So why aren't you happy?
You are not responding to these questions.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If the agreement is abandoned, what is your concern?
Well, my concern is that the trustee, despite the purported abandonment, will still seek the return of collateral.
But he won't receive it on the basis of an agreement that he's abandoned.
I agree with that, Your Honor. I believe it's a theoretical matter.
Then what is your concern? If he seeks it on some other basis unrelated to this agreement, that's another case. That's not this case.
I do not believe there would be another basis, Your Honor, for seeking
that. That's irrelevant what you think about another basis.
You see, what you're saying is like saying we're concerned that if he's abandoned it, he will seek a pound of flesh from me personally. Well, the trustee might seek a pound of your flesh, but you'd have a perfectly good legal defense to that claim, right? It's not the fact that somebody may seek something to which they're not entitled.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that we can't go on with life. Resolve what they're actually entitled to.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor, but they would seek that pound of flesh not in arbitration but before a bankruptcy judge, and the arbitration clause.
But unless the bankruptcy judge shows up with a knife, you shouldn't worry.
Well, respectfully, the clause, among other things, the arbitration clause says that we're entitled to have arbitration before people experienced in the industry.
Look, the arbitration clause is part of an agreement which they say has been abandoned. Mm-hmm. If the agreement has been abandoned, the arbitration goes with it, right?
It should, in theory, go with it. That's correct.
So, but what's left for us to say except, you know, they say they abandoned it, that's the end.
If it's a true abandonment.
What do you mean a true abandonment? If they say they've abandoned it, why isn't that a true abandonment?
Well, I think it is, but I also think that
if it is, then do you have any further concern? In this case, is there anything left in the appeal?
Well,
and do we even have jurisdiction?
I don't believe the court has jurisdiction,
well,
but I don't believe.
My question.
I'm about to do that, Your Honor. Thank you. I believe that there would be nothing left for the trustee to pursue against my clients.
That's not my question. If the agreement is abandoned, what concern do you have with this appeal?
Well, because my concern is that my clients.
Suppose we reverse and we say the arbitration clause is moot because the entire agreement containing it has been abandoned. Now, if we said that, what concern would you have?
My concern would be then that the trustee would run into bankruptcy court and say that they're entitled to seek recovery of the very same money under some other theory than the contract.
Well, if it's some other theory, why should we be worried about it in this appeal?
In fact, if it's some other theory, I don't know how the arbitration could help you. You could win 100% in the arbitration, and they could invoke some other theory.
They could. I don't know what that theory would be, Your Honor. They may seek to invoke, for example, a provision of the bankruptcy code as an independent theory for recovery. But and we haven't really briefed that issue, but the courts, especially the District of Delaware.
You want us to discuss it?
No. I'm just saying that I haven't researched that lately, but the District of Delaware, for example, in
the
case.
Why are you giving them ideas?
Well, I try to avoid that, Your Honor, if I can. But there's a case called Olympus Healthcare that I have for this same client in the District of Delaware, where the very same argument was made that the cause of action is not a contractual cause of action that the trustee was bringing.
What does that have to do with the arbitration? The arbitrator would only be arbitrating disputes arising under this program agreement.
And the dispute, though, is regardless of the theory
but
of recovery.
But if the program agreement is abandoned, there's nothing for the arbitrators to do.
Well,
what? You can't argue.
I'm trying to come to grips with Your Honor's.
You can't argue on the one hand that the program agreement has been abandoned, on the other hand, that the arbitrators should decide issues arising under the program.
I'm not arguing that the program agreement has been abandoned. I'm arguing that they're seeking, in effect, to seek the benefits under the.
They say it's abandoned.
Well, they do. Then that kills their claim, as far as I'm concerned, altogether.
But then there's no basis for ordering them to sign a hold harmless agreement, which is the appeal, right?
Well,
they can't be forced to sign a hold harmless. They can't be forced to sign a hold. The trustee can't be forced to sign a hold harmless agreement under an arbitration clause, which has gone down the drain with the abandonment of the contract in which the clause was found, right?
If there was a true abandonment, I do
Don't
not agree that there has been one.
A true abandonment.
Right.
If we rule that it's abandoned, it's abandoned. That's true abandonment.
If the court rules that the executory
and then there's
contract.
There's no basis. You agree, don't you? If there's a true abandonment, there's no basis for forcing the trustee to sign a hold harmless agreement.
And I agree with that, and I think there are other consequences for the trustee as well.
What does that mean?
It means the trustee cannot seek to recover the money they're seeking to recover now because our obligation is suspended.
That's not the issue.
Well, Your Honor was asking me about what the effect of a true abandonment would be, and respectfully, that's what I think it would be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.